Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Roger Marsh. Religious liberty is a guarantee in our Constitution. But what happens when a man of faith is hired to serve in a state government position, but is then fired from that post because he also serves as a volunteer pastor in his church? During the next half hour, Dr. Dobson's in-studio guests are Dr. Eric Walsh and attorney Jeremy Dice. Dr. Walsh is a health professional who was, in fact, fired from his position as a director of public health simply because he had preached sermons in the past supporting the biblical view of marriage and sexuality. Jeremy Dice is senior counsel for the First Liberty Institute, the organization that provided legal counsel for Dr. Walsh in his case against the state of Georgia. And now here is Dr. Dobson to introduce our guests today on Family Talk.
Well, welcome, everyone, to Family Talk. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson, and there are two men who have joined us today in the studio that you're going to want to meet. Let me introduce first Dr. Eric Walsh. He's a physician who graduated from the University of Miami and got his medical degree there and then went on to study preventative medicine and public health at Loma Linda University School of Medicine and Public Health. And he is a very accomplished man. I'm very impressed by his credentials. And if I took time to read them to you, it'd take the whole program. He's highly trained and respected in his field. He was appointed by President Obama to the Presidential Advisory Council on HIV and AIDS. He was also director of public health department in Pasadena, California. Shirley and I were students at Pasadena College, just several miles from where Dr. Walsh served. We're going to pick up his story there. But before I do, I also want to introduce to you Jeremy Dice, who graduated from Taylor University, cum laude, and that's Latin for really smart. And he went on to earn a law degree from West Virginia University College of Law, after which he worked and continues to work at First Liberty Institute, where Kelly Shackelford is. We had him on a program here just several weeks ago. And he is now the senior counsel for Liberty Institute. These are good men. You're going to see that very quickly, and you'll be inspired by the road that they have walked together, especially Dr. Walsh. He's kind of a hero for a lot of us. And so I say welcome, gentlemen, to Family Talk. It's a pleasure to have you here. And we're going to be talking, Dr. Walsh, about an experience that you've had that will resonate with many people who are listening to us today. Before we get to that and what took place in the state of Georgia, I want to know a little bit about your background and especially your mother and how what she taught you led to the profession that you have chosen, because those are all linked together.
She was a single mother. There were three of us, and I have an older brother and a younger brother. And, you know, there were a lot of people who probably thought the three of us would wind up criminals, but they didn't know how.
You grew up in the inner city?
Just outside in a suburb of Hartford, Connecticut. But my mother was a tough woman, so, I mean, she didn't take too many shenanigans. And she really, really did drench us in a knowledge of God. And
sounds kind of like Ben Carson's mom.
When I read the story, it resonated with me when I read his book. And so, you know, going into public health and medicine first, but then after getting into medical school and going through, I found public health after as another way to express, you know, medical knowledge and to work as a physician. And, you know, I really liked the South, and I just thought that position would be really good. It would switch me from an urban public health environment in L.A. County to a more rural suburb setting in Georgia. And I just thought that, you know, knowing what I know about those areas, that there was a lot that I might be able to bring to the table for those populations.
Tell us what the director of public health does. What's his role? He's a county employee usually, isn't he?
A government employee, state, yeah. City, county. A lot. Most times in the country, you're right. Probably most work for a county across the country. When you direct a public health department, it is really a collage of a few veins of work. So you have nutrition programs, you have health education programs, you have sometimes even addiction treatment programs. You'll have disease, infectious disease control and prevention programs.
You are very interested in HIV,
yes.
AIDS, and worked really significantly in that arena for a
yes.
time.
I lost a good friend to HIV. He went to church with us and really changed the way I wanted to serve. And so that's part of why I was very much driven in that field. You know, that's one of the areas that we public health really does focus on. I mean, along with many, many other things. I mean, you know, it's not all just disease prevention. There's a lot of health promotion. You try and do violence prevention work. If you understand public health properly, you understand that there's social determinants upstream. So education, jobs, families, environmental factors all play a role in healthy populations. And so I wanted to bring that with me to whatever job I went to and was excited at the chance, actually.
I kind of baited you a little bit about your trip to Georgia because that didn't turn out so well, did it? As
no.
a matter of fact, shortly after you were given that position, you hadn't even moved yet, had you? Weren't you yet to go to Georgia?
No, I had not moved.
Yeah. So you had just settled in there, and it became known that you were also a lay pastor in the Adventist movement. And you were speaking. You brought sermons to the congregation, and that turned out to be a big problem.
It did. And I was terminated from the job.
How soon?
It was less than days.
Yeah,
within days. It was less than a week and a half after accepting the position.
For what reason?
You know, honestly, I'm not fully aware. We never really got to the root of everything. I mean, from what I can understand, though, you know, from my perspective, it really had a lot to do with my faith and the work I've done in the faith.
They went online to get your sermons, didn't they?
Yes,
they
did.
To see what you stood for.
Yes, they did.
And demanded to see the rest of your sermons or as many as you had. There wasn't even time dated for as many as you had. They came and said, we want to see everything you've written. I mean, wouldn't anybody with any knowledge of religious liberty and its guarantees in the Constitution know that there's a free speech issue here? In fact, I'm not going to ask you that. I'm going to ask the lawyer. Jeremy, is that what I just asked true? Shouldn't many people have known they were heading into deep water there?
I would think that most Americans would agree and know that you cannot fire someone from their job for something that they've said from the pulpit. That's a basic element of our understanding of what it means to be free in this country, that our pulpits are free and that we encourage our pastors to say what their religion encourages them to say from the pulpit. What's important to keep in mind with Dr. Walsh's position here, he was exceptionally well qualified. You mentioned he served on President Obama's Council for HIV and AIDS. He had a doctorate in public health. He had a medical degree. He was extremely well qualified. In fact, we have emails from the Department of Public Health in Georgia that say it's one of his interviewers writing to the commissioner on public health. And he says, we need to find more money in the budget to pay this guy because we're not going to find a more qualified candidate coming around anytime soon. And so you have someone lobbying for more money to pay Dr. Walsh. And then they find out that he's a lay minister as well, and they asked for copies of his sermons. They didn't wait for him to send them, although he did. They went out and found those sermons on YouTube. They divided them up, and we have the emails of the Department of Public Health saying, you watch these four sermons, you watch those four sermons. Tomorrow we'll get together and discuss them. 2 days later, Dr. Walsh is terminated. It was nothing that Dr. Walsh did on the job. It was nothing he failed to do on the job for why he was fired.
There yet.
He wasn't even there yet. The only reason Dr. Walsh was fired was for something that he said in a sermon. Now, that should send chills down the spine of every freedom-loving American, and here's why. imagine that at your next annual review, you're asked to bring in copies of your sermon notes, or you're asked to bring in copies about the that lesson you prepared, that flannel graph you prepared for the kindergarten Sunday school class at your church, or you have to bring in whatever other writings may be at your synagogue or whatever institution you go to. Imagine if that's part of your annual review. Well, the law that we have in the United States today says that you cannot fire someone because of their religious beliefs or their free exercise of religion. And this is a well-settled area of the law. So for the state of Georgia to fire Dr. Walsh for something he said in a sermon, and then in the middle of the litigation demand that he turn over all of his sermons, his sermon notes, and his sermon transcripts, that is an egregious violation of religious liberty and employment law.
Mm. Eric, may I call you Eric?
You sure can.
Tell me what that did to you. What did that do to your confidence? What did that do to your wondering where God was, because he seemed to lead you in this position? What was going through your mind at that time?
Growing up the way I did, I really lived my life to honor my mother in a way that is, transcendent. Because of what I saw her sacrifice for
us. She's still living?
She's passed now. But that memory of her drives me to this day, that I'd want to live a life that she would find me honorable because of what I saw her sacrifice for me. And so all of my accomplishments, everything I've achieved, I don't take any credit for. She gets the credit, and first and foremost, Almighty God gets the credit. And so when something like this happens, and really what you're trying to do is just be the person your mother told you God wanted you to be. It really does hurt because you ask yourself, you do ask that question, where's God?
Yeah.
I've committed no crime. I've hated no one. I've never spoken an ill word to anyone. There's no one that could come from anywhere I've ever worked and say, this guy did me wrong. He was mean to me. No one could ever say that. In fact, the opposite is true. Almost anyone I've ever worked with would say this guy did an excellent job and he pulled his weight and he really worked for others and for those who worked for him. So when you get hit with something like this, you think, wow, all the years of school were a waste. You start thinking, all of the time, extra hours, late nights you spent on the job that you don't get paid for, making sure that some program is the way it's supposed to be in public health was a waste. You start thinking, maybe God has forgotten me. Maybe in all of this, he has. And, one of the things that buoyed me when the pain of this thing really did settle on me, and believe me, there were many nights where I cried myself to sleep because it was just such a public thing as well. I mean,
of course, insult.
Yeah. And to try and ruin your reputation. And it was very, very difficult. But the Psalms became my medicine. And as a physician now, I prescribe the Psalms to anyone who's going through something that really just seems like they're underwater in trouble. And Psalm 77 is one of the Psalms I love greatly because Asaph talks in the first half of the Psalm about all his troubles and all his woes. And then he says, but then I remembered the good that God has done. Around verse 11, he wakes up from all of his whining and complaining in the first half of the Psalm. And there's this shift. And he says, you know what? I need to stop and actually think about how good God has been. And I think somewhere in the process that happened for me, when I was wondering what I was going to do next, because at this point, you're blacklisted basically in all of the public health world. And I was sitting with one of my best friend, D. Rose, out in California, and I was sitting in his living room, and he said, what are you going to do? And I said, I've always wanted to be a missionary, and I could never do it because I was so busy with this career. Within 30 minutes, I got an email from a recruiter to go into the mission field in Asia within 30 minutes of saying that.
I didn't know that part of your story. Did you go?
And I went. I went almost a year and served while all of this was going on, while the great people at First Liberty were being God's voice for me and being my defense in the name of God. I was able to go there and serve others. And the pain, that I felt, I was able to work off in many ways through serving other people.
When did you become a lay minister?
I've been doing that many years now. I've done it for several churches, and I'd say it probably goes back to the early 2000s.
So it was before you had this encounter with Georgia?
Oh, long before, yes. I'd been doing that work as a youth pastor initially. And
What did they find? Excuse me for interrupting. What did they find in your sermons that were so offensive? Did they ever tell you?
Well, what I will say, what I can say from what I've seen from the media, there was an article in the Los Angeles Times, and they said that I was not qualified to be a scientist. This is an editorial in the LA Times because of two things. Because in a sermon I mentioned that I didn't want my children to wish upon a star, as is popular in some in one of our entertainment world.
What's that got to do with science?
And I said, I want my children to pray to the living God. And then they said, and he's not qualified because he believes that God created the world. And that that was an editorial in the LA Times that said because he believes God created the world or something to that effect. And what was interesting, of course, was the scientist that they used to buffer my I'm a creationist. Nobody's ever going to sway me on that one. But the scientist comes in and says, well, maybe he wants to believe that the theory of gravity isn't real either. And I said, well, that's how bad their science is, because gravity's a law. Evolution's a theory.
Yes.
And you're comparing an apple and an orange to try and make me look stupid.
Now, let's figure this out. You have an MD degree, and you have a doctorate in public health.
And a master's in public
health. And a master's in public health, and have been in positions of responsibility in public health. And they're questioning your qualifications at this stage of the game?
Again, you know, I think in some ways it was meant to make an example of me. Maybe to scare.
Was there any discrimination involved there?
Possibly, honestly.
Out of Georgia?
Well, I wouldn't specify anyone. I would just say I probably was a lot more defenseless initially because I'm an African-American of a minority group. But I think it really comes down to what America is really going to have to wrestle with. Race is one of the things in our past we've had to wrestle with. But I think going forward, it is going to be ideology and belief. And I think that the lines are going to be drawn that way more. And that was my experience.
And Dr. Walsh's case makes a great example of that, where there's this reigning notion, it seems like, in the polite conversations right now, that you're not supposed to be a person of faith in public, that your religion is something that you practice within the four walls of your church, but don't let it leak out of there. Because if you carry that into your place of work, if you carry it into the corner office, or if you carry it into the manufacturing floor, that's not welcome in our society. But the reason that this has become an issue in Dr. Walsh's case in specific, we don't know the exact sermon that was the straw that broke the camel's back for the Department of Public Health. He's preached on everything from Genesis to Revelation, how to care for the sick, the poor, and the needy, and everything in between. So he's covered every topic that is out there. But the very fact that they asked for the sermons, that itself is an illegal action by an employer. They can't ask for religious materials to try to build a case against you with. And they did that, and then they listened to it, and then they fired him for something that they found inside one of those sermons. But I started this by saying that Dr. Walsh is a good example of this, because we're asking people to keep their faith out of public sight so often that now it's creeping into the workplace. But unless Dr. Walsh had actually stood up on this issue, and unless he had actually stopped and said, no, the Constitution says I'm allowed to do this, and so does the Civil Rights Act of 1964, that whole body of employment law, my country protects my right to freely exercise my faith outside of work, and certainly I shouldn't be judged for that inside of my job. Because he has now done that and has been successful in doing that defense, many, many more people that are in employment and facing these situations throughout the country, they themselves have been strengthened because of Dr. Walsh.
Well, how did First Liberty go about defending him? Because, first of all, you got to get the right to sue a state department like this. And that comes from the EEOC.
That's right.
And you appeal to them.
Yeah.
And they're not exactly on your side, mostly.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first thing, it started by becoming his friend. You know, we went out and we met with Dr. Walsh like we do with all of our clients, got to know his story and figure out where his the strengths and weaknesses of his case were and review the law. And in this case, it was pretty clear to us very quickly that this is a very strong case. And then we did what we have to do under the law. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 requires us to go to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, file a complaint there, which we did. They investigated the matter and they said, you know what, we're not going to say yes or no. We're just going to give you the right to go to the federal courts and sue the state of Georgia over this. And we said, thank you very much. Took that letter with us to the federal district court, filed a lawsuit against the Department of Public Health in the state of Georgia. And we were off to the races making a federal case of the whole thing. And it was in that process where during the period we call discovery, where we're trying to find more information about the case from either side, the state of Georgia, through their attorney general's office, sends us a letter and says, we want to have every sermon note, and every sermon transcript that Dr. Walsh has ever given. Now, think of the intrusiveness of that. It is not just like for the last week or for the last year or during the pendency of this action. It was for all time. It was not just the ones that were written. It was every format that was out there. It was if he had scribbled an outline on a napkin at a restaurant, he's got to discover that as well, got to produce that. If he had written in the margin of his Bible a little note to remind himself to preach about something like that, that preaching Bible now has to be turned over to the state of Georgia. Now, we've seen rogue mayors and rogue cities like Houston having done this in the past. But that was – we can chalk that up sort of to chance and being that one city, albeit a major city in our country. That happened as a city. This is the state of Georgia kicking down the door of a pastor's study, wanting to rummage around his materials and see if they can find incriminating evidence to use against him. Thankfully, Dr. Walsh joined me on the steps of the state of Georgia's capital, and he said very politely and just as gracious of a man as he is, I can't do that. This is not the material that the state gets to have their hands on. This is something that is a sacred desk for us as pastors. You're not entitled to my sermons, nor will I give them to you. That, thankfully, I think drove them to the bargaining table, and we were able at the end of the day, without having to go through an entire drawn-out trial, we were able to settle Dr. Walsh's case for almost $250,000. And so that resolution is a very positive one. But I tell you this, Dr. Dobson, we would have lost this case if Dr. Walsh did not want to bring the case at all.
It took courage to do that, didn't it?
Tremendous courage. We win over 90% of the cases we involve ourselves in at First Liberty Institute. We lose 100% of the cases that we never bring. It's because of good men like Dr. Walsh who are unashamed of their faith in the first place and are willing to be known as a person who follows Christ. But more than that, when something rough like this happens to him, he's able to turn around and say, no, 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 I know what the Constitution says here as well, and I'm going to work to defend.
Was part of the settlement that you got your job back?
No. In fact, by that point, I was already working somewhere else and really wasn't interested in getting the job back. I do want to back up a little bit to the courage statement. And it's funny because I say this now a lot, that initially, you know, the media and others tried to make me into a villain. And now individuals want to make me a hero. And I'm very clear, I'm neither. You know, I'm just a sinner saved by grace. And honestly, I didn't want to, and Jeremy would be my witness, I really didn't want the attention. I didn't want the focus. I mean, you know, this is probably the first time we're doing anything like that. And big part of it is because it's you. And I grew up listening to you myself. But, you know, and I still don't. You know,
You haven't shared this many times.
Not at all. Honestly, I mean, I've just begun to actually talk about it in some churches.
It's time somebody told you a story. Because this was wrong. This is not what America stands for. This is not what our founding fathers protected. And I appreciate you are a hero to me for having the courage to stand up against the power of the state. Are you kidding? And you've as important as First Liberty is, they took on the world there in that part of America. And you prevailed. And my goodness, Jeremy, you must have felt good walking out of that situation.
You know what I felt good about is that my first meeting with Dr. Walsh, and I remember sitting inside of a restaurant in Pasadena with him talking about this case. And what he was most concerned about was the damage that had been done to his name. He's a good man, and he had done the right things, and he had been punished for it all. And I remember thinking at the time that if we got nothing else out of this entire case, I want to restore this man's good name because Scripture reminds us that a man's name is better than fine rubies, right? And so my whole goal or our goal at First Liberty the whole time was to make things right for him to clear his good name again. And I think we've done that. At least we've started
down
that.
Today, too. And we're out of time, but I want our listeners to remember your name, Dr. Eric Walsh. And to know something about your story, because it ought to be known. Dr. Walsh, thank you for caring enough to come and share this message with our listeners, because the easiest thing for you to do is to remain quiet about it and let it go away. But you have been willing, by what you've said today and in other places, to let it be known that you can fight for what you believe. You have a right to, and that you should. It will take courage. It will cost you something. It will be personally insulting. And yet, if we don't stand up for what we believe, we will lose what we believe. And so I appreciate you, and let me call you a hero, can I?
You can call me whatever you want, sir.
Blessings to you, my friend. You love the Lord, don't you?
I sure do, more than anything.
Well, it shows. And I only met you today. Will you be my friend?
I sure will.
Okay. God bless you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And that concludes an eye-opening edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Now, if you'd like to read more about Dr. Walsh's case, we have a link to First Liberty's site on our broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.